2:30 to 4, Monday to Friday. It is the Blitz here on AM 1450 KATE. Mitch Widmeyer here with you. We go to the phone lines. He hops on every week. We're always thankful and appreciative for his time. Find his work at gopherillustrated.com. Ryan Burns with us this afternoon. Thank you as always, Ryan. We'll get to what happened in Evanston on Saturday in a couple of minutes. We'll start on a softer note. Can we get an update on the recruiting front and whether or not anything has happened since last week when we last talked?
Yeah, we're just playing the waiting game with the quarterback position right now. The two positions, I think Minnesota's kind of waiting to see how they're going to fill out this 2018 recruiting class with 23 commits right now, or they're trying to figure out the quarterback position now that Brennan Armstrong is no longer part of the class. He's now a Virginia Cavalier. And Minnesota's got three written names right now that they're really dialed in on, one being a junior college quarterback by the name of Victor Viramontes from California, a one-time Michigan commit, a one-time California enrollee, Cal Berkeley, that is. And then when Sonny Dykes was fired, this is a quarterback in Victor that was supposed to replace Jared Goff at the University of Cal Berkeley, and then the head coach was fired. He didn't figure into the new plan, so he went the junior college route. So Minnesota's battling with Ole Miss, amongst other schools there. And then the two high school quarterback names to really know right now are one from the state of Texas by the name of Matthew Baldwin. He is someone that picked up an Ohio State offer. Now, he's about third on the pecking order for them right now, so he's not a take right now, but it is worth noting that Ohio State thinks very, very highly of this kid. He's currently committed to Colorado State for Mike Bobo out there for the Rams. Kentucky's also jumped in the mix, so we'll see how much work that Minnesota's able to get in there. And then finally, a kid from Greenville, North Carolina, currently committed to ECU by the name of Holton. I believe you pronounced his last name Ayers. Someone that we have highly rated here at 24/7, someone we think very highly of. The reason he's a highly rated kid and he's going to ECU right now is he's got a lot of deep family connections there. He's from the town, and Minnesota's trying to get in the mix there. So we're just kind of waiting to see what happens with the quarterback position if Minnesota decides to kind of go with another offensive lineman as well.
We had brought up the name Brennan Armstrong about, I think, like a month or so ago, and you called your shot on this show at that time, how you thought it would play out, and you were correct in that he wouldn't be a Gopher, but that he also wouldn't be a Buckeye and that he wouldn't be playing for Urban Meyer. Did it make sense then when you saw him land at Virginia? Because I knew at the time you had thrown out a couple other schools as potential landing spots as well that didn't include Minnesota or Ohio State.
Yeah, I think when we had this conversation a couple weeks ago, I think I brought up Virginia, North Carolina, and Indiana. Virginia was the obvious school for him, close to home. He'd already visited it. He's in the playoffs there. Doesn't have time to really look anywhere else. But as you mentioned, again, the Buckeyes kind of, I think, threw a wrench into things. And he, you know, decided that he wanted to kind of pursue that. Minnesota wasn't always on board with that. And, again, now he's going to be a Virginia Cavalier. And, you know, I have a bunch of people on the Twitter machine or Gopher Illustrated telling me that, you know, he's a huge loss. Well, again, I think it's too early to say that because you don't know who Minnesota is bringing in to potentially replace him. Say it is Baldwin and Ayers. Again, I think that is a very, very good combination to put together with Zach Anakstead, the former Mankato West quarterback. Again, it's too early to say how this is going to play out. There is only 29 days until the first national signing day in December, so Minnesota's got to get some things figured out here very quickly. But I think we have to wait and see until we know what Minnesota is going to be able to sign in that December 20th period before we can really make any deductions.
Always enjoy his time with us on the program. He is Ryan Burns. He covers the Gophers for Gopher Illustrated. Find his work there at gopherillustrated.com. What did I watch on Saturday, and how do the Gophers go from, you could make a case maybe for the Oregon State game, maybe there's another one out there that's escaping my memory, but I thought, Ryan, the Gophers went from playing arguably their best game of the year against Nebraska to their worst game of the year against Northwestern. How does that happen in a one-week span?
Well, I think the weather played a part in it. You look at the weather on Saturday afternoon in Evanston. It was 35 degrees with sustained north winds at 25 miles an hour. There was a gale force warning for the city of Evanston, obviously right off of Lake Michigan there, and I know just a mile and a half east of there, with it being Lake Michigan, there was a 16-foot wave on Lake Michigan because there were gusts over 50 miles an hour. It was sneeting, and Minnesota just frankly didn't show up, and it is what it is in that kind of a setting. It looked like Minnesota's defense was prepared for one thing in terms of to watch Northwestern sling the ball all around the field. That was a Northwestern team that had thrown the ball more than 35 times in each of their Big Ten games. But Minnesota was planned for that kind of a game plan. And what Northwestern came out and showed was a lot of power, a lot of counter, a lot of two and three tight end formations because the weather dictated their scheme. They saw that the weather forecast was going to be that. It was going to be nasty. It was going to be extremely windy. They knew that they weren't going to be able to pass the ball over the field. And I knew that Minnesota was very susceptible on the ground, especially to the gap running game in terms of the power and the counters, and that's what they were able to do. They ran the ball 55 times for 5 yards a carry, 3 rushing touchdowns. And I kind of want to give the defense somewhat of a reprieve because the offense was much more inept to me. The offense turns the ball over 5 times. They give the defense all 5 of those on a short field. Northwestern scores on 4 of those. And it's tough for a defense to really do a whole heck of a lot when they're, you know, have 20 yards behind them or 30 yards behind them and the offense can't get anything going. I mean, Minnesota was 1 of 11 on third down. Just so many things went wrong, including even the special teams game. Minnesota's punter Ryan Santoso struggled for most of the day compared to Northwestern side. So this is one of those games where you kind of acknowledge that it happened, but then you put it into your little garbage bin and you set it on fire and you try to get ready for next week, in my opinion.
That's what I was going to ask you. My very next follow-up was, is this one of those let's just burn the tape and move on type games, or do you actually go back and break things down? I don't know if P.J. Fleck was asked about that. Obviously, they wouldn't ask him if he's going to burn the tape or watch it, but if he was asked some sort of form of that, the Buffalo game this weekend in the NFL, they threw out a rookie quarterback, their fifth rounder, Nathan Peterman. He throws 5 interceptions, and I know their coach, Sean McDermott, said after the game, I've never said this in my coaching career, but we will not be going back and breaking down the film. So I'm wondering if it's a similar thing with P.J. Fleck and the Gophers after this one against Northwestern.
I would imagine so, because I know that's what I would be doing. I know that the Michigan game was kind of in that same respect, even though I think Minnesota played a little bit better on each one of the facets of the game of football there. But this Northwestern game was just the offense couldn't do anything except, I mean, they did run the ball a little bit, but the issue was the running backs each had a fumble that they lost. Minnesota has 3 interceptions. I mean, the stat really going into the final drive of the game for Minnesota was they had as many turnovers as they did first downs on the day. And it ended up that Minnesota had more, I don't know how this is even possible in the game of college football, but they had more interceptions than completions. Minnesota completed their first 2 passes of the game, and then for the final 56 minutes of the game, they didn't complete another pass. That's what happens when you have 6 drops and 2 throwaways and 2 picks. So, again, if I was P.J. Fleck, I don't know that there's a whole lot to draw from this game. You have 1 game left. It's against an undefeated Wisconsin team coming to town. I don't think there's a whole heck of a lot of a point to really break down this game. There's not a whole lot of good things to say in it, and I know that my mother once told me, if you don't have anything good to say, don't say it at all, and I think that applies here heading into the final game of the season this weekend.
All right, so the Gophers have had issues, wide receivers not being able to haul in some passes. You mentioned Demery Croft had more interceptions than completions, although 1, maybe 2 of the interceptions weren't directly on him. They still go down as interceptions statistically for Demery Croft. The defensive line, or not just the defensive line, defense in general, has given up tons of rushing yards the last handful of weeks. All of that, Ryan, yet are you under the impression that the thing that perhaps most frustrates P.J. Fleck right now is the turnovers, because he has that mantra and that line that the football is the program, yet they're turning it over at somewhat of an astounding rate?
They are. That's an astute observation by you, is that they've, as you mentioned, the mantra that's heard around many a Gopher football practice is the ball is the program. It's even in the team meeting room right above Heinz Center right there. And you look at Minnesota the last few weeks, they've been turning the ball over and they haven't been forcing turnovers. Minnesota is -5 in the take give on Saturday. And you look at the Michigan game, they weren't able to force a turnover there. You look at the Nebraska game, they weren't able to force a turnover there. Again, Minnesota, I believe heading into that Michigan game, had forced 12 turnovers in the last 4 games. Now, maybe this is all just regressing back to the mean, because that's probably a rate that you're not going to be able to continue at for the length of an entire season. But now Minnesota, at least in back-to-back games, and I believe in their game against Michigan as well, they haven't forced a turnover. You know, whether you count turnover on downs as a turnover or not, Minnesota's not getting interceptions. Minnesota's not getting forced fumbles. They're not falling on those fumbles. They're having issues giving their offense, which needs a jump start, absolutely, the ball on a short field. And the offense, again, they can't hang on to the ball right now. They're throwing too many interceptions. Again, I don't really place a whole heck of a lot of it on Demery Croft. I thought he actually played better than obviously a 2-for-11 for 43-yard stat line would show you, because he's getting zero help from basically anybody else in the field. He's also dealing with a lower body injury. And I know that was one of the things that many Gopher fans were talking to me about, is where was the read option game? Well, Northwestern brought another guy off the edge, so when Croft would go to read it, instead of seeing only one guy he's reading, there would be another linebacker or a safety outside of him. So it was a natural thing to just give it to Rodney Smith. Plus, he's a little bit injured from that Nebraska game, so the read option game wasn't working. And just as you mentioned, if Minnesota's not winning the take give, they're not a deep enough and talented enough football team right now to be winning games like that. So if they're going to have any shot this weekend, they're going to have to absolutely win that take give.
Always love having him on the program. He is Ryan Burns. Find his work, gopherillustrated.com. You brought up Twitter a couple of times. How was your Twitter feed during the game, after the game? How many people were clamoring for firings across the board? That stuff, it just kind of makes me laugh. Year one of a new regime. And look, it was a frustrating loss, and I understand that the fan base, some of them are going to be more on edge and more agitated and less patient than many other, maybe I say rational, people who understand this is year one of a new regime. But how was your Twitter feed? I would assume it was pretty active during this game.
It was very active. It always is during a Gopher football game, and usually as the shortcomings start to come out in a Gopher game and Minnesota starts losing, everybody decides that it's the OC's fault, the DC's fault, the wide receiver coach's fault. We need to fire them all, even though we're just 11 games into the PJ Fleck regime. You'd be surprised the amount of times I get blamed for hurting Gopher football. That was, again, prevalent in my Twitter mentions on Saturday afternoon. It's always somebody's fault. So even I get into the mix. Apparently, I hurt Gopher football as well. So it's never a good place for Minnesota. I mean, anytime, because everybody just wants to turn to social media to vent. I understand that. It's kind of why my mentions are there, for you to get your negativity out, get your venting out, so you don't take it out on your home life or whatever it may be. But I can tell you, if you kind of get that garbage basket we were talking about again, put a little bit of splash of gasoline in there and put a match in there, that's about what it looked like at about, 3:30 in the afternoon on Saturday. So it was not a pretty place.
Perhaps the hottest of all hot takes that I saw, man, I can't, someone retweeted it. It was a Gopher, I'm assuming a Gopher fan, was upset, saying that the reason Minnesota Golden Gophers football is struggling is because the fan base doesn't demand greatness, and that it's the fan base's fault because they don't put pressure on the university and don't demand greatness. And that one honestly got me to chuckle a little bit. How crazy is that?
Well, that's the thing, is if they didn't demand greatness, PJ Fleck wouldn't be here. If they didn't demand greatness, Tracy Claes would still be here. That old staff would still be here, and Minnesota would probably be winning somewhere between 5 and 8 games every year for the next decade. Now, if you want to win between 5 and 8 games every time for the next decade and become Glenn Mason once again, that's fine. But I just believe that the ceiling for PJ Fleck is just so much higher than what it was for Tracy Claes, because PJ is a head coach that actually gives a crap about recruiting. He's someone that spends a lot of time doing it, and that's something I couldn't really say for previous regimes. And I don't know how you can expect to be a head football coach in the Big Ten and go weeks without asking how recruiting is going, or not be calling kids every night. So again, recruiting is the lifeblood of any college football program. And one of the stats that I like to look at is from one of my posters, or just a Gopher internet blogger by the name of MV. He put together the stats using the 24/7 recruiting rankings and the composite. The composite is just the average of all the recruiting ranking sites. So since 2015, Minnesota against Power 5 opponents is 8-1 against teams that have equal or less talent, according to the 24/7 recruiting rankings. And now they are just 4-13 against teams with better talent over that same span. So what PJ Fleck is here to do is improve recruiting. Minnesota is, I believe, currently sitting as the number 33 recruiting class overall. They are just behind Wisconsin for the top recruiting class in the Big Ten West. I think they ultimately end up passing Wisconsin, so they will end up likely signing the best recruiting class in the Big Ten West. And that's where you want to be, each and every recruiting class, and that's what PJ Fleck will provide you. So I just think the ceiling is so much higher with PJ Fleck, and that's why Mark Coyle is demanding greatness, because PJ Fleck is here.
Speaking of Wisconsin, they are up on the schedule next regular season finale at TCF Bank Stadium this Saturday afternoon. We know what the Gophers' defense hasn't been able to do lately. It stopped the run. We also know Wisconsin loves to run the ball, and they're very effective at doing so. On paper, it's obvious to say then this is not a great matchup for the Gophers. Wisconsin opened as a 17.5-point favorite. Ryan Burns, would you make of that spread? Did it make sense to you?
I am shocked the line hasn't moved more, because I know that, okay, so Vegas thinks this is going to be about a 31-14 game. I don't know how Minnesota scores 14 points. I don't know how Minnesota scores 10 points, because this Wisconsin defense is no joke. Iowa put up 14 points 2 weeks ago off two pick sixes from the Wisconsin quarterback. This Wisconsin team absolutely shut down Michigan last week. Minnesota's offense isn't nearly anything like what Michigan's is in terms of skill position talent, in terms of just overall talent. So how is Minnesota going to move the ball? Again, I mentioned it. They had more interceptions than completions because the receivers are are having an extremely tough time catching the ball right now. And so if Minnesota is not going to be able to run the ball because Wisconsin's front seven has been elite at defending the run, how many times is Demaryius Crofton going to either get eviscerated off the edge or he's going to have a drop? It's just very surprising to me that this line is only 17, because you also mentioned it. Minnesota can't stop the run, especially they can't stop the gap. The gap kind of schemes of power and counter, well, you can be assured that the Badger offensive line knows that. And Jonathan Taylor, the star running back for the Badgers, I mean, I'd put the over-under at the number of rushing yards probably at about 180, because I think he is going to have a monster day. Minnesota just cannot stop the run right now. Their linebackers are getting pushed around far too much. I don't know how much longer Minnesota can continue to throw out Jonathan Celestine. I know he's battling through an elbow injury. It's going to be senior day on Sunday, so you give him the start. But I think it's nothing more than that, because I think you have to demand more from your linebackers. The secondary just continues to kind of have struggling with the run fit. And, again, I am shocked that this line has opened at 17 and remained at 17, because I don't know how Minnesota scores in this game.
What matchups will you be keen in on and, like, eager to watch unfold during this game on Saturday?
I'm curious to see how Minnesota responds. It's the final game of the year. Not a whole lot of things have gone right for you of late, but it is the battle for the Paul Bunyan axe. So how do you show up knowing that you have an opportunity to, number one, get the axe back for the first time in 10, 15 years, and you also have an opportunity to ruin an undefeated season for your much-hated rival from Madison? I'm going to be able to see how, again, Minnesota's front seven works against that Wisconsin offensive line. I know that they've had some real struggles here of late. How does that go? Can Minnesota receivers catch more than one out of every two passes thrown their way? Or is it going to continue to hit them right between the numbers, bounce up into the air, and then the opposing team's going to get an interception? Again, I guess the battle I'm watching is, how does P.J. Fleck get this team up? Because, again, this is a very important game for many Gopher fans. Everybody, in terms of Minnesota fans, hate Wisconsin. They hate, you know, the amount of success that they've had in both men's basketball and in football in the last two decades, and they want that. And so the opportunity for Minnesota to potentially ruin an undefeated season must be very appetizing for many Gopher fans. Now, I don't know that it's likely that it's going to happen, but this is college football, and crazier things have happened each and every week. So, again, can P.J. Fleck get this team up? I think he's going to be able to, but how long can the defense hold if the offense continues to go three and out, interception, interception, fumble? That's a big key for me.
Let's bounce around the Big Ten before making your picks for the week. I'm curious on your thoughts right now. College football playoff rankings, Wisconsin sits at fifth. If they beat Minnesota and they beat Ohio State in the Big Ten title game, I don't see any way that they would be left out of the playoff. Are you of the same mind?
I am. Again, I think they'll beat Minnesota this weekend, but I don't know that they're going to be able to beat Ohio State. I know Ohio State is 9-2. I know that their two losses are terrible losses, especially as the Hawkeyes don't show up against Purdue last week. But this is an Ohio State team that seemingly always gets better as the season goes on. And their nine wins have been absolutely convincing nine wins. Now, again, I believe it's already set in stone that Wisconsin and Ohio State are going to meet in Indianapolis, and Ohio State's going to need a little bit of help if they're going to be able to make the football playoff. But if Wisconsin does beat Ohio State, they deserve to be in the playoff, in my opinion. They did what they needed to do. You know, say what you want about their schedule. But I don't know that they get there, because I have a lot of faith in this Buckeye team. I'm going to be very interested to see what that line opens as, because I think this Ohio State team is going to give Wisconsin all they need.
Let me ask you this one then. Does Ohio State have any chance whatsoever? I know it's unlikely. They would need a lot to fall their way. But if they were to beat Michigan this weekend and then beat Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship, do you even give them hope at a playoff spot?
Absolutely. Yes, I mean, I do. I mean, they're going to have to win both games. They're going to have to beat, again, maybe one of the most important Big Ten rivalry games is that Michigan-Ohio State game. They're going to have to win that game, I think, pretty convincingly. And then they're going to have to beat Wisconsin. And, again, they're going to need to see some things fall their way because we still have Miami versus Clemson on the schedule, an undefeated Miami team versus a 10-1 Clemson team, number two versus number four. You still have Alabama versus Auburn coming up here in the SEC championship game. I mean, there's a lot of opportunities for other teams to potentially slip up, and they're going to need some of that to happen. But if Ohio State wins out, I mean, you're not going to get an argument from me. I think they're going to be a number three or number four seed, and I'll be excited to see what they do in the playoff.
All right, let's finish up with your picks. You were 3-1 last week. You are +8 for the season, and we've got four more. Yeah, pretty good. You've got four more on the docket for this week, and we'll start with those Buckeyes. Number 9, Ohio State, is -11, Ryan Burns, at number 24, Michigan. Ohio State, an 11-point road favorite. Who do you like?
See, the big thing is, what is Brandon Peters' status? And that, I mean, that's the gigantic question mark and the giant elephant in the room. Brandon Peters looked like he had that offense going pretty good before the Badgers knocked him out last week. Now, if it's going to be whatever Michigan quarterback they're on at this point, I think Ohio State's going to have a great opportunity here. But I think I'm going to take Michigan in the points because this is a rivalry game, and it is at home for Michigan. Crazier things have happened, especially with the way that the Buckeyes have been either really hot or really cold this year. So while I think Ohio State does win this game, I'm thinking it's going to be a lot closer to that 7-10 margin instead of that 11+.
Number 1, Alabama, -4.5, a road favorite at number 6, Auburn. Who do you like?
Ooh, I mean, you're going to have to think that Alabama just shows up and they show up well. Again, this is a very big rivalry game between Auburn and Alabama. I think Alabama wins this by 10 points. I have a lot of faith in their defense right now. I know that Jalen Hurts has that offense playing very, very well. Auburn has been coming on of late. This is a team that is 9-2. They've won 4 in a row. But until someone can knock off the Crimson Tide, I don't know how you cannot pick against Alabama to do at least win by over a field goal at least. So I'm going to take Bama in the points.
Notre Dame squeaked by Navy. I think it was a one-touchdown win for them at home on Saturday. Now they go to Stanford. It's number 8 Notre Dame, who is a 2-point favorite at number 22 facing the Cardinal. Who do you like?
Oh, ain't that the question of the day? An 8-3 Stanford team that's won 2 in a row. I know that Bryce Love is definitely up there in the Heisman conversation. If he wants to have a coming out party, he's going to have his opportunity to do so on a national stage against this Notre Dame Fighting Irish team. Again, you have the number 9 and the number 20 teams going together. Stanford is at home. Oh, I mean, you mentioned it. Notre Dame hasn't exactly been playing well. They didn't play well last week. Stanford, I think, is starting to kind of figure it out a little bit more and more. Well, I think I'm going to pick the upset here. I'm going to go with Stanford. I'm going to have them take the 2.5 there. I think they're going to win outright, and I think this is the Bryce Love coming out game that kind of put him in the conversation with the Saquon Barkleys and the Baker Mayfields of the world.
Here's your bonus pick, and it's a cruel one because I'm a complete jerk. I've given you 3 matchups of all-ranked teams. This one is number 13, Oklahoma State. They're a 40.5-point favorite at home against Kansas, who has been miserable. Now, remember last week, you took Illinois +41.5 at Ohio State, and they covered for you. I would say Illinois, if they played Kansas on a neutral field, I'm thinking Illinois wins that game by double digits. Like, Kansas is awful. They're a 40.5-point dog at number 13, Oklahoma State.
Again, I still think the math tells me that there's something from this Jayhawk squad that makes this a 35-40-point victory. But this is where I'm going to change it. I think it is going to be Oklahoma State in that -40, just for the sole reason of this is the Big 12 and no one plays defense. Like, the over-under in this game is 70 points with a -40. So where does that put us? That's like 55-14. Again, I don't know how Kansas is going to be able to keep up with Oklahoma State's offense. It is senior day down there. Maybe they take the foot off the gas in the third quarter, but just the lack of overall defense in the Big 12 makes me think Oklahoma State can win this by 42-45. So I'm going to take, and I know the odds probably aren't in my favor, as I explained last week, but I'll take Oklahoma -40.
He's got Michigan plus 11, Alabama minus 4.5, Stanford plus 2.5, and OK State minus 40.5 points. Find his work. They're constantly churning out great, great content. GopherIllustrated.com is the place to go. Ryan, thank you as always.
Sounds good. I'll talk to you.
We've got the Jim Moore playoff segment coming up next.